is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The European Union, all eyes on Russia. However, the European Union, these 27 countries, are at the moment undergoing a revolution because more than a decade ago, there was much concern that the European Union would fail because of the profligacy of the members that were collectively called pigs. That's right, pigs, as in the English word pigs. Portugal, Italy, Greece, and Spain, the pigs. Well, the tables have turned. And while Eastern Europe and Northern Europe frets over meetings with the Russians and is this the end of peace, we turn to the success I learned from Stanley Pignal, who is the correspondent for The Economist. He is Charlemagne, and we're looking at a surprise. Stanley, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. I want to begin in Italy because since the pandemic, I speak with Italy every week. My correspondent lives in Milan. He travels to Genoa and Rome. The Italians are delighted, thrilled, exuberant over Mario Draghi, the former European central banker, who has taken command of a coalition that I'm told doesn't hold together 5 minutes after he leaves the door, out the door. But he's staying as prime minister. The source of this sudden burst of confidence in Italy, where did it come from, Stanley? And we'll then talk about these other nations that are also equally exuberant. Good evening to you.
Good evening. So the source of exuberance in Italy is very much, as you mentioned, Mario Draghi. He is enormously respected in the European Union. He was, as you mentioned, the former head of the European Central Bank. He's the one who nearly 10 years ago said the European Central Bank would do whatever it takes within its mandate to save the euro. And that pretty much overnight ended the first phase of the eurozone crisis. Now, Italy has been kind of in a state of perennial economic crisis, really, for kind of 20, 30 years, very low economic growth. It's kind of fallen out of the top league of European nations economically. And it has known that it needs to do reforms. It has not been able to do them. And now Mario Draghi perhaps is doing them. And this is an enormous contrast compared to 5 years ago, 10 years ago, when, as you pointed out, Southern Europe and I think Italy, perhaps most of all, was seen as the risk to the eurozone. It was the country that couldn't shoot straight. And now, at least politically, it has the biggest star in the EU.
Do I remember correctly that there was chatter, I believe it was German chatter, to divide the EU in half and to have the euro for the north and something less than the euro for the south?
Well, there was certainly talk of excluding some countries from the euro. Most prominently was Greece. I think Greece actually came quite close, perhaps, at one point to leaving the euro. And there was a sense that if one member state leaves, it's obviously very complicated and you might as well, you know, tidy it up and see if you just keep kind of two euros, one of them for the Northern Europeans who, you know, had their fiscal houses in order, and one of them for Southern Europeans, the so-called periphery at the time, the pigs. They hated being called the pigs, but that's what they were called by the Northern Europeans. And they could mismanage their finances all that they wanted without needing to be bailed out by the Germans and the Dutch and other Northern Europeans who had kept their house in order.
We go to Greece immediately. Kyriakos Mitsotakis, hosting Valérie Pécresse, who is the new topic in France. Mitsotakis, you introduced to me, and I do not have a background on this, as a center-right idol. Is he the man who is reforming Greece's forever indebtedness? Is that happening now?
It's starting to happen. I mean, he being a center-right idol in Europe at the moment is a very low bar to clear because there are so few center-right politicians at the moment. If you think of Germany, it just elected a center-left chancellor. France is run by liberals. There was just a great success in Portugal for a socialist, Mr. Costa. Mitsotakis is at the head of a very small club. He is seen as reforming Greece. It is a very, very long haul to reform Greece. The state needs to be kind of brought into the 21st century, which perhaps is happening, but they're making all the right sounds. They're privatizing a few things. They are kind of talking cogently and coherently about how to reform the economy. If you remember, Greece at one point had very unconventional lefties running the place. There was a finance minister, Yanis Varoufakis, who was not very much appreciated by anybody else in the Eurozone because he was talking about taking Greece out of the euro and nationalizing banks and all the rest of it. Compared to that, Greece now feels like it's very well run. In many ways, it's run like a northern European country. Again, how long does that last is the question. These are countries that need more than years of reforms. Perhaps they need decades of reforms, but there is a feeling, unusually, that for once they're on the right track.
I distinctly remember sharp words by Germany toward Greece. Has that stopped? It was disdainful and disrespectful at the time, but that's a decade ago.
It was, and it's even less than a decade ago. It went all the way to the second wave of the Eurozone crisis, which was in the mid 2010s. Yes, that very much has stopped. There's a very much more constructive atmosphere. If you remember, after the Lehman crisis, the global financial crisis, when it morphed into the Eurozone crisis in Europe, there was a very kind of Austerian, everybody must meet their obligations discourse that was imposed from Northern Europe onto the rest of the club. So there's this kind of Germany talking down to Greece. Now, this time around, in the pandemic-induced economic crisis, there's been very much more solidarity. There's been a big fund that was set up in which Germany and other Northern European countries are sending actually quite a lot of money to places like Greece, like Italy, like Poland, to help them get back on their feet. So actually, the whole discourse feels really markedly different now than it did 10 years ago.
Before Germany speaks ill of Greece, I would recommend they look into their museums and return some of those treasures they have. However, we move on to the Iberian Peninsula, Portugal and Spain. What beautiful places, what wonderful climate. And the question is, are either of them are challenging almost a tradition now of high unemployment? Is that changing, Stanley?
So things are going in the right direction. Remember, there's been a great deal of new public money that has been unleashed following the pandemic. Europe started off with a very comfortable social safety net, and it added to it during the pandemic, much like America did. So as a result of that, we're seeing a very healthy labor market. The question is, Is it sustainable? What those countries have needed to do is reform the labor market so that it is easier for people to get full-time jobs. At the moment, stereotypically in Southern Europe, the problem is that once you have a job, you keep it for life. And therefore, employers are reluctant to give people jobs. They'll give them part-time jobs, they'll give them internships, but are very reluctant to give people full-time jobs. So having a more flexible labor market is meant to be the solution to that. And we've seen Spain move in that direction. They certainly did so after the Eurozone crisis, and now they've recently passed some reforms which go in the right direction. And Portugal, as I said, just re-elected a socialist prime minister, but a socialist prime minister who has talked very coherently about public finances. This is a more sort of modern socialism in which you start with balanced books as opposed to sometimes the traditional forms of socialism in Southern Europe, which ran very large deficits for many years.
Is the Basque disruption quiet at the moment, and can it erupt at any moment? That often is a threat that's quite outside finances.
It is quiet at the moment. You say it's outside finances. It is, but it can spook investors. It can spook the economy if it does flare up. But right now, it's not kind of a principal preoccupation. You have some other separatists in Catalonia around the Barcelona area. That also is ongoing, but you don't. These things come in waves, and my sense is right now is not one of those periods in which it's something to unduly worry about.
The reporting here is deep irony, because while Northern Europe is all tied up in a pretzel dealing with Russia, Southern Europe does not, to my memory now, weigh in much of these crisis meetings. I believe Mario Draghi spoke on the phone to Vladimir Putin early on in the crisis, but I don't remember a trip by the prime minister. The other nations, I don't remember weighing in as well. Are they quiet members of the EU and NATO, holding back, concentrating on domestic matters and not getting involved in this international crisis?
Well, they're certainly engaged. They're engaged as members of the EU. They're engaged as members of NATO. But I think it's part of the reflection of how Italy fell out of the leading club of EU members economically, is that its foreign policy has mattered somewhat less. It is not on par with France. It's certainly not on par with Germany or with the UK, which is now out of the EU. So these are kind of second tier countries. Their views matter. Greece traditionally has been quite close to Russia. There's an Orthodox alliance. But if you really want to see kind of who matters in this crisis, who's likely to make those big trips to Moscow, to Kiev, you have to look much more to Paris, to Berlin, to London than to places like Rome or Madrid.
To touch on Italy again with Mario Draghi, I'm told, Stanley, because I speak often with an engineer, that the money flowing from the EU following the pandemic, I believe it's called the NGEU, the next generation money, that is a profound change of Italy's confidence. Yes, it's Mario Draghi, but yes, it's the ability to use that money to reform the way business is done. Is that generally true throughout the peninsula?
That's right. I think it's a combination of exactly those two things. It's Mario Draghi at the helm and an inflow of EU money, which can be used in a way to ease what are quite painful reforms, and we're starting to see them. The question is, how long is it going to last? Mr. Draghi had ambitions, perhaps, to rise to the presidency of Italy, which sounds impressive, but actually is a much less important job than the prime minister job that he has now. Part of the reason he didn't ascend to the presidency is because nobody knew who to replace him as prime minister. And as a result, he's stuck as prime minister for another few more months or perhaps a year. But at one point, Italy's messy politics, I mean, he's sort of a compromised technocrat candidate prime minister at the moment. He's not going to stand for election. And so at some point, there's going to need to be a new premier. And the pool of applicants for that is kind of much less impressive and certainly doesn't command the level of respect and admiration that Mr. Draghi enjoys.
Stanley Pignall is the Economist correspondent Charlemagne on the European Union. And when we come back, I remember the story that Napoleon said an army moves on its stomach. What about the stomach of the EU? And this is surprising. Did you know prosciutto is challenged as healthy? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.